This is Paul Timothy from yourprofitclub.co.uk. Today's guest is my friend and mentor, Mitch Axelrod. Mitch trained the J. Abraham Proteges in how to sell consultancy services, and Jay said this. Mitch conducted three of the most heavily attended and laudatory reviewed teleconference calls we've ever sponsored, with 200 marketing consultants in one day. His seminar is two of the most illuminating and expansive days you will ever spend. If you want to increase sales, call Mitch. He can turn anyone into a sales green beret. Brian Tracy also raves about Mitch. My good friend Mitch Axelrod is one of the foremost authorities in sales and marketing in the United States today. Mitch has trained more than 100,000 men and women on peak performance selling skills. His technique, his method, and his process are responsible for boosting more people into the ranks of the top 10% than any other trainer alive today. Mitch has a sales training program called The New Game of Selling, which is terrific. Welcome, Mitch.
Hi, Paul. Great to be with you today.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted that we sort of finally got around to sort of putting this interview on. So tell me, Rich, why do you think so many business owners find themselves in the role of reluctant salesperson with a dislike or even a fear of sales and marketing?
From my experience over the past 32 years, not just myself, but having trained now over a million people, I find there's some common threads that run through the fabric of why business owners are reluctant to sell. First off, selling, as it was in the old game, was a very distasteful process for most people and very unnatural to most people.
Right.
If you think about how the old game of selling was played, it was predominantly a persuasion game, and it was a transactional game. And the purpose of the game was for you to get the money out of my pocket and for me to put the product into your pocket. And so most people, business owners especially, first off, they didn't have the natural skill to sell.
Right.
They were never taught to sell because most business owners start a business with a technical expertise, not a sales and marketing background. The other thing is that when people were taught to sell, the old game selling models were built upon how do you essentially persuade and convince somebody that what you have is worth exchanging money for. And so if you really look at most of the old game selling models, they were very much counter to the natural personality of what makes people friends and what makes people comfortable in conversation. Now, you know, in the 1980s, actually in the 1990s and crescendoing in the first decade of this 21st century, we saw a transformation in that more and more marketing strategies became available to people. And so over the past 20 years, my observation is marketing as a discipline and marketing has exploded on the scene. When I first did the J. Abraham Protege training in 1989, it cost $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
You can get that course now basically for free. And certainly most, if not all, of the models and the methods and all of what Jay taught in that course, you can literally now get that information for free if you search it out, because marketing has become so ubiquitous, so abundant.
Right.
The problem is that the sales models have not grown in equal measure to the marketing strategies and the availability of marketing tactics. So you've got this proliferation of marketing, more marketing strategies, tactics, methodologies, models than you could literally install in a lifetime. And yet you've got very few new, what I would call new game sales strategies. And so what's ironic about that is marketing is an expense, marketing is an investment, and marketing is red ink until you convert that browser or that lead into a buyer, at which point it becomes sales and revenue.
Yeah, no, I agree completely.
And so I see that as one of the major issues. The other thing is, marketing is seen as clean work. You know, everybody wants to be a marketer because it seems like it's clean work and it's attracting people to you. Sales is the dirty work. Sales is something that, you know, you have to get down and dirty with people, get into the trenches with them, and then ask them for commitment. And I think, you know, all of these combined makes it very difficult for business owners to become good at sales even though many of them are good at marketing.
Okay, that's interesting. And of course, sort of the actual sort of sales conversion process brings with it this sort of big fear of rejection, doesn't it? It's that sort of critical point of whether the customer says yes or no.
And that's a very good point. And not only does it bring a big fear of rejection, but it also brings that fear of commitment and asking for commitment. Most of us were not schooled and trained in learning how to ask others for commitment. So most of the old world or old game sales training was designed around closing techniques. So your pen or mine, you know, the Ben Franklin balance sheet, the assumptive close, the right angle close. And these techniques were really counter to most of what the buyer was comfortable with. And, of course, with the advent of the seismic shift in business, the shift from the seller having control of the marketplace to the buyer having control of the marketplace, that shift now essentially made every single closing technique an antiquated relic from the past, because the buyer knows when the seller is moving into that, you know, in for the kill, so to speak. He gets the sense that, okay, it's time to ask for the order. And so it was an uncomfortable crescendo, and it's funny because you spend all that time building a relationship, marketing, promoting, qualifying, and then you get to the point of commitment, and neither party is really comfortable with that transition. And so when I developed the new game of selling, actually started 15 years ago and put the course out 5 years ago, what we did is we made it very easy, natural, and comfortable for both buyer and seller to come to the logical and emotional and only conclusion that the next step is for you to work together. And that really is probably one of the biggest benefits of the new game of selling, is making that commitment phase, asking for commitment, asking for the order, so to speak, comfortable not just for the seller but for the buyer as well.
That's right, and it doesn't involve any of those sort of closing techniques which can feel very manipulative.
No, there's no closing techniques. In fact, I would argue there's only two ways to ask for commitment. Well, one is to ask for commitment. The other is to make a statement.
Yeah.
So when you really break it down, you can take all your closing techniques, throw them out the door. If you get comfortable with understanding when you get to that point of commitment and the buyer really is responsible for making that choice, your job is to facilitate it, make it easy for them to say yes, if yes is the highest and best solution and in their best interest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Mitch, can you explain your ideas about the buying cycle and why and how you need to adjust your selling approach based on where the other person is in the buying cycle?
Sure. About 20-something years ago, I kind of coined the phrase the buying cycle, and I framed it out as a three-phase process. If you really look at where people are in the buying cycle, which is completely different than where we are in the selling cycle, what you find is that a good 60, 70, 80% of conversations are out of alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out of alignment because we're not matching up with the buyer's buying cycle. We've been taught that everybody we talk to is a real buyer, and they're a real buyer today. And we haven't necessarily been taught to make that distinction. And so when I talked about the buying cycle first in 1989, and I said, you know, there's really three phases to the buying cycle that everybody goes through. They start off satisfied where they are today.
Right.
And then they go through a period of dissatisfaction. So most people, if you look at where they are right now, you meet them where they are, it's very easy to identify where they are in the buying cycle because they're in one of three states of readiness. Satisfied means exactly what that is. I'm satisfied where I am today. And when you meet a satisfied buyer, they're really not a buyer. They're just really satisfied from the point of view that they have no dissatisfaction. When I first got into business in 1978, my first sales training program in the insurance industry taught me something that I never felt comfortable with, and that was, how do you make a person who's satisfied dissatisfied?
Right.
And so they taught us to disturb people, all right? Literally, they use that word. Your purpose is to disturb people because they think they're satisfied, but they're really not satisfied, and your job is to disturb them into being dissatisfied.
Okay.
So, you and I go back quite a few years, and you know my feeling about that.
Yep.
People are disturbed enough. I don't want to have to disturb them anymore. So I never felt comfortable with that whole notion of disturbing people. I felt like if I meet somebody who's satisfied, I don't actually want to talk to that person today, because until they have a felt dissatisfaction, until they acknowledge that they're dissatisfied, they're not only not a candidate for me, they're not even worth talking to, because they're going to get irritated if I try to persuade them that they're dissatisfied by disturbing them when they're really satisfied. So you look at your pipeline of prospects. All of those people who are satisfied, you want to put them into your pipeline and educate them and communicate them with them, but you do not want to meet with them or talk to them today.
Okay, yes.
The next, that's phase one.
Yep.
Phase two is dissatisfied. When people become dissatisfied, whether they're mildly dissatisfied, 1%, or they're extremely dissatisfied, 99%, they're now into phase two of the buying cycle. When you meet somebody who is dissatisfied, that means that they're going to have varying levels of interest to make a change, because right now they're not comfortable, they're not satisfied. So the biggest population of buyers in any industry, in any business, for any product or service, is the population of phase two buyers who are dissatisfied. Now, there's a critical distinction here I want to make, because this one distinction has not only saved people hundreds of millions of dollars, but it's made people hundreds of millions of dollars. It saved them, I would say we've saved millions of hours of human time, not wasting time with people who are really just mildly dissatisfied, but nowhere near enough dissatisfied to start looking at a new alternative. And so one of the critical distinctions is when you meet a dissatisfied buyer, your first objective is to figure out and find out how dissatisfied are you. Are you dissatisfied enough to start looking at an alternative? Are you mildly dissatisfied? Or are you what I call getting ready? And this is the biggest distinction between a phase two buyer, dissatisfied, and a phase three buyer who is ready.
Right, okay.
And when you really look at your entire pipeline of prospects right now, and you can triage them among these three different categories. Your satisfied buyers you want to educate. Your dissatisfied buyers you want to help to motivate. But it's your ready buyers right now that you want to activate. And so when I share the buying cycle with people, I like to make things very simple so it's not complicated or cumbersome or complex. Here's the critical question that you can ask every single buyer to find out where they are, phase two or phase three.
Okay, tell me, Mitch.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Or are you just getting ready?
Right.
Are you ready or are you just getting ready?
Yeah.
In other words, if you're ready to make a change because the pain of the problem, the cost of the problem is too great, or the value of a solution is too great, and you're ready to make a change, you are a phase three buyer. I call you a hungry fish. If you're not ready, you're getting ready. My job is not to solve your problem, not to give you an alternative solution, not to sell you. My job is to help you through a process we teach in the new game of selling called the three magic words, alignment, agreement, and commitment, to determine at what point and with what criteria you will move from getting ready to being ready. And the distinction of somebody who's 99% ready, meaning they're 1% away from being ready, they're still getting ready, versus that person who's jumped over that phase two to phase three being ready, I call that little space in between the Grand Canyon of lost opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because more and more business opportunity is lost between the confusion of the seller thinking she has a phase three ready buyer when she actually has a phase two getting ready buyer, and the action you take as a seller is completely different with a phase two buyer, even a 1% away from being ready phase two buyer, than a completely fully 100% ready buyer. So look at your pipeline of prospects, go back and identify everybody as either phase one satisfied, in which case you communicate with them and educate them, phase two dissatisfied, and determine how dissatisfied they are, and that requires you to help motivate them. And then phase three ready are the people you should be talking to right now, proposing your product or service as a solution, because it's the phase three ready buyer who right now is ready to make a decision and they're looking for the answer to their problem. And one last thing on this, everything we do in the new game of selling is designed to put you in front of as many phase three hungry fish buyers as you could possibly be, because if you have an endless pipeline and universe and population of phase three buyers, how much time would you actually spend with phase two buyers?
Very little.
Right. And certainly you wouldn't spend any physical or active time with phase one buyers, because there's nothing to talk about with them until they at least move into phase two, and then move at least more through the phase two process towards the end of phase two. So that's the buying cycle, and I'll tell you what, Paul, that one distinction has helped literally hundreds of thousands of people now eliminate the frustration of thinking, I should have closed them better, I should have done something more, because now you know sometimes people are simply not ready to buy.
Yeah, now I've got a couple of points to make, actually, Mitch. First, I think you can actually see with the mismatch where you think sort of someone's in a different stage of cycle to you. It actually sort of plays a big role in sort of making selling uncomfortable, because you're basically trying to close somebody who isn't ready, or you're trying to sort of educate somebody who is ready, and you're not talking their language.
That's a phenomenal point. And when you say mismatch, I call it out of alignment. And I mentioned the three magic words, which we may or may not talk about today, but most of the old school, old game selling and the sales training was designed to close the sale. And so I don't use the word close, I use the word commitment, because the commitment is a mutual commitment. It's a commitment for the buyer to invest money, and it's a commitment for the seller to deliver on the promise that the buyer is buying. So it's not closing a sale, which kind of indicates the end of a relationship and ready to move on to the next one. It's a commitment that both parties make to fulfill their end of the bargain. The buyer fulfills their investment and whatever they're going to pay for that solution. The seller fulfills by delivering on the promise of that solution. And so that's mutual commitment. What I've discovered is that most of the old game training and the old school of selling was all about gaining commitment, yet very often you don't have alignment and agreement. And if you don't have alignment, if you're mismatched, if you're not meeting the buyer where the buyer is, and you're trying to move the buyer to where you are, you're out of alignment. Even if you get agreement, you're not going to get commitment. And if by some chance you do get commitment because you're out of alignment, but you've got really good persuasion skills, you're never going to have a satisfied buyer, because there was no agreement and the commitment was not made with a firm foundation of alignment. So my philosophy has always been, solidify the alignment, meet people where they are, don't try to push them across the street. You know, I use the buying cycle and the three magic words as an example. I use the analogy of three green lights.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to pass through arm in arm. You and I want to walk through three green lights to get to the promised land. The first light is alignment. If you and I are aligned on what you want, how you want it, when you want it, the way you want it, and with whom you want it, then we can move from that green light to the next green light, which is agreement. And now we can agree on all of the ways in which you want that product delivered, the time frame, what you're committed to investing. And then if we move through that green light together because we have alignment and agreement, now we can move to commitment. And at that point of commitment, it's a mutual commitment. We say, are we ready to commit to working together? And now you have a firm foundation of alignment and agreement, and the commitment becomes an easy next step, a natural next step in the process. But imagine if you're trying to get people to commit, but you're pushing them through the red light of alignment because you didn't get alignment. You say, come on, let's go across the street. And then you move to the next red light of agreement, and you say, come on, let's cross the street. And people are saying, no, I don't want to go. I'm stuck at the red light, and you're trying to push me across the street as if the light were green. So the buying cycle helps you to identify where people are so you can meet them where they are so there's no mismatch. You can get alignment. Then you can move to agreement, and commitment becomes the natural consequence of having strong alignment and strong agreement. So you are absolutely right on the money when you say people are mismatched, and that creates discomfort on both parties. And now rather than being an excited start to a brand new relationship, you've got that tension that comes up when people are asked for commitment when they're really not ready to make one.
That's right, and all the objections and everything that sort of goes with it. The other point I wanted to make was this sort of difference between sort of getting ready and being ready, which you make in sort of one of your new game videos, I think, where you compare it to sort of going out for a meal with your husband or wife, and you're saying sort of, yeah, are you getting ready? Are you ready to go? And you try and hurry them up. You finish up having an argument in the car or whatever because you've put too much pressure on them to sort of, to do things too quickly.
Well, you know, the new game of selling is really more than a sales training, and it's really more than a sales course. It's really a way of being in life in all of your relationships, because if you look at selling as not persuasion, not old school, not old game, convincing people to do something because you want them to do it when you want them to do it, and you look at the models that we teach in the new game of selling, every single model that we teach in the new game of selling, you could apply to every aspect of your life. And I do get, I always get people laugh at this because it's so true. You know, it's like you say to your wife, you say to your husband, hey, hon, are you ready yet?
Yep.
Or are you just getting ready? You know? And it's so true. A relationship is built on the foundation of being aligned with your spouse or your significant other, having agreement on what's important to both parties, you know, meeting each other's needs, and then having mutual commitment to say, you know, are we both committed to this, or is it something you want to do on your own, or is it something I want to do on my own, or is it something that we're going to do together? And so when you really look at this, every single model we teach in the new game of selling can be applied to relationships, spouses, children, talking to your physician. I mean, even in social situations, I've had people come up to me and say, your rejection-proof networking, which we just completed a brand-new video on, rejection-proof networking, how to talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime about anything and eliminate rejection for the rest of your life. I use that with my spouse. I use it with my kids. We can even use it on dating. So you're right. Everything we teach really transcends just selling. It's really life skills for business and business skills for life.
Mm. That one example really brought home to me the difference between sort of getting ready and sort of actually being ready to go out.
So. Yeah, and it's a very simple question that you can ask just about anybody. And that stimulates a conversation about if I'm ready, you don't have to, if I'm ready and you as the seller, you don't have to go through all of the machinations and all of the preparation and all of the precursors. You can basically say, okay, you're ready. Now let's talk about what kind of solution is going to be worthwhile for you. And we can go right into the conversation about how my product or service or solution will match what it is that you need to solve. Whereas if a person is getting ready, you know that that conversation is premature and that conversation has to be delayed until you absolutely get clear about what it will take for that person to move from getting ready to being ready. And that's actually a conversation that we can have using one of our models called the RAM formula, which is, I think, one of the things you wanted to talk about.
Very much so, Mitch. It moves us on to some of the next question, because I really like the way you qualify buyers with the RAM formula. Can you explain how that works?
Absolutely. The way that works is about 25 years ago, I realized, well, actually it's 32 years ago, when I first got into business in 1978, I was selling life insurance, mutual funds, and doing fee-based financial planning. And so I did not want to say to people I sold life insurance because, you know, people have a preconceived notion, and most of the time they feel like, okay, I have enough life insurance. Thank you very much.
And
that's not a happy conversation typically to have with people. So what I decided to say was, I'm in the transportation business. And when somebody said, what do you do? I said, I'm in the transportation business, and I help people get from point A to point B financially. And that changed the whole conversation that people had from, whoa, you sell life insurance, to, really, where are you going today? Where do you want to be? What is your financial destination and your financial point B, so to speak? And so what I developed about 5 years later is I developed a formula for how to qualify people in literally 10 minutes or less and help them actually with this formula that essentially is their flight plan for success. And I call it the RAM formula. And the RAM is an acronym that stands for Result, Action, Measure, Modify. And so if you look at anything in life that you want, any goal that you want, any destination that you're headed for, any outcome or objective that you seek, the RAM formula is the flight plan for you to get there. Now, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get there, but what it does guarantee is that you'll always know where you're going, what action you're taking to get there, measuring whether you're on or off course so that you can then modify and make your course correction. And so let me just run through this really quickly. So in fact, the best way for me to do it is maybe I can ask you these questions. So, for example, Paul, let's start with a result. What one result right now in your personal business would you say would be the single most important result that you are committed to achieving in your business right now?
Oh, now there's a leading question, Mitch. Let's say launching my mastermind groups.
Okay, terrific. And so if I were probing, and of course for time purposes, I'm going to speed this up. This can take anywhere from 5 minutes to 30 minutes, depending upon how deeply you want to get into the conversation. I would ask you, why do you want to set up a mastermind? I would ask you, what does that mastermind look like when it's all said and done? In other words, when you achieve the result, what would it look like? What would it be like? All right. And then I would ask you, are you really committed to get that result? And let's say you gave me yes answers to those questions. You described what it would look like. You described why you wanted to do it. Now the next step would be action A. Now, what action have you taken to create that mastermind? So the first part of action is for me to find out what action have you taken so far, past action, to create that mastermind.
Okay, I understand. Do you want me to answer? Or?
Well, you don't have to answer. I'm trying to get some context here. The second part of that action would be what present action or actions are you taking to create that mastermind, okay? So that would be the second question. Now, the third question would be, what future actions are you planning to take to create that mastermind? Now, here's one of the critical distinctions I make around action. You know, you've heard since you were a little boy, you've got to take action. Take action, take action, take action. Everybody says take action, right? Just do it. Yet with all of the admonitions to take action, very few of us are able to take the kind of action that we need to get us off of inertia, get us out of inertia. So here's my mantra, and I developed this mantra 15 years ago for myself because I'm a perfectionist, and sometimes I can play the perfection game so much where I get stuck in paralysis of analysis.
Yeah, I've been there.
So you know that how that feels, right?
Oh, well, I do, yes.
And so I came up with a phrase, and that phrase is imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. So when I meet somebody who's stuck in inertia, they're either not taking action or they're fearful of the action or they're not sure what action to take, I say very simply, take imperfect action. Get the plane off the ground, and then you can move to step three, which is measure.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Step three is essentially when a pilot creates his flight plan, plugs it into the automated system, then has to get the plane off the ground, because if you don't get the plane off the ground, no matter how good your flight plan is, you'll never get from point A to point B, where you are to where you want to be. And then step three is measure. The pilot measures using his sensory acuity, meaning he sees where he is. He also uses his onboard navigational instruments so that the instruments tell him where he is. So he knows where he is relative to his destination at all times. My experience, not only with having trained a million people, but with my own personality, is very often I will get off course because I stop measuring against my target. Now, of course, if you were a pilot, you could never do that because you have, you know, the precious cargo of 200 lives in your hands.
Yeah.
Yet what I discovered for myself is if I don't measure, if I'm not consciously measuring, continually measuring against my target, it's very easy for me to drift off 1 degree, 5 degrees, 10 degrees off course. All you need to be is 1 degree off course. And if you track that out to its infinite trajectory, meaning where you want to be in your destination, you will not get to your destination if you're just 1 degree off course. I would argue and I would submit that probably 80 to 90% of the people I've worked with over the years, true for me too, were 1 degree at least off course. Many were more, 10 degrees, some were 20 degrees off course, so far off course. And for a lot of people, they don't measure. We have this innate distaste, it seems, to measure because we think if we're off course, we're failing. But that's not true, and I want to reframe that game right now.
Okay.
When you are off course, you are simply off course. You are not failing. You're just drifting. And by measuring and knowing how far off course you are, qualitatively and quantitatively, not just with the numbers and the measurements, the hard measurements, but with the qualitative issues as well. Am I having fun? Is this enjoyable? Am I satisfied? You know, a lot of people are dissatisfied with their work today, and when they measure qualitatively, they're not on course. They may be on course quantitatively, but they're not on course qualitatively. So measure is step three, and by measuring, however far off course you are, it enables you to move to step four, which is to modify. And like every good pilot, like every person who has mastered the art of understanding that no goal, no matter how big or how small, do you get to with a direct line that you're always going to drift off course a little bit. It's said that a rocket ship fails its way to the moon. The key is not to stay on course 100% of the time without deviation. The key is to measure that when you're off course, to make those nice, simple, quiet, easy adjustments to get you back on course. And so when you modify, you change, you revise your course, you make an in-course correction. And if you get stuck in the notion that you're supposed to take perfect action and you wind up getting off course and you judge that as failure rather than simply being off course, you're going to find it much harder to correct course because you're judging that as failure as opposed to just saying, hey, I'm off course, let me make an in-course correction. And without judgment, look at what change, what adjustment, what revision, what in-course correction will get you back on course. And if you don't let yourself get 10, 20, 30 degrees off course, you keep measuring and modifying, there's a much higher probability you're going to get to where you want to go that if all you do is keep on putting your nose down and going forward without actually measuring and modifying. So this RAM formula, at the end of the RAM formula, what comes out the end of this, if you use it as a qualifying formula, if I were to ask you, Paul, are you willing to modify if you're off course, you're going to say to me one of three things. You're going to say, no, I'm satisfied where I am, in which case I cannot help you, because if you're off course but you're satisfied that you're off course, there's no persuasion, no persuasion, no convincing, no magical closing technique I can use to convince you if you're satisfied. I would then say, okay, is there anything that could cause you to become dissatisfied or possibly ready to make a change? And if your answer is no, then I want to break and move on, get referrals, get introductions, and not waste any more time with you because you're satisfied. And even if you're off course, you have absolutely no intention to change to get back on course, which means I can't help. If you're dissatisfied, but you're not yet ready, at least now I can understand where your dissatisfaction is. I know where you're off course, and I can help you to help yourself by saying, what will it take for you to make a choice to get back on course? What are the criteria? What are the steps that might help you get from getting ready to being ready? And, of course, if you say to me, I'm off course and I'm ready to make a change, now, all of a sudden, the opportunity is great for us to work together. And within 5 or 10 minutes using the RAM formula, not only have I given you a magical gift, a navigational tool to help you get where you want to go, I've also now helped myself to qualify you for your level of commitment. Are you ready? Are you just dissatisfied? Or are you satisfied? And then I know exactly what the next action is, what the next step in the relationship is. So use the RAM formula to help you qualify people and help you identify where they want to go, result, what actions they're taking, measure on or off course, and then what modification are they willing to make and in what time frame so that you know whether or not you can help them and to what degree you should continue the relationship at this point.
I mean, I love it because I think it's sort of such a sort of a gentle and nurturous technique to sort of to get the potential buyer to focus on sort of on their key issues.
Yeah, there's no question. There's nothing I've ever used or I've ever taught with so much efficacy and efficiency as the RAM formula. I have an insurance agent who made $500,000 sale with an accountant over a lunch just by using the RAM formula and asking those and going through those four steps. The person says, you know what? Nobody had ever done that with me before. Nobody had ever made that kind of giving me that kind of model to help me see where I am in the process and navigate my way to from where I am to where I want to be. You're going to get all my business. And it turned out to be a $500,000 insurance policy. And he never had to present it. He never had to close. He never had to go through all kinds of machinations to get the person to agree, just using the RAM formula. So it's very, very powerful.
Yeah. So I've got to admit, so people ask me about some of my sort of selling styles and things. And I always say, so yeah, my approach is very much more based on sort of on helping the other person to buy, and I think the RAM formula does exactly that.
Yes, that's the whole purpose. It's not only helping the buyer to buy; it's helping both parties to know what is it that you're seeking, what's the result, what actions are you taking? Are you a person who has a bias for action, or are you stuck in inertia? One of the great things that comes out of the RAM formula is if a person is in inertia, they're stuck, they're not taking action. You can actually help them get out of inertia, and that's a gift. That's such a huge gift to people who are stuck in inertia to help them and say, okay, we can help you by moving out of inertia. Let's measure where you are relative to your goal, and let's look at what modification step you can take to get you back on track and get you out of inertia taking imperfect action. So, yeah, it's just a phenomenal formula that has so much utility. Every time I teach it to somebody, they come back and say, this has really changed my life.
Yeah, great. Okay, so let's suppose we sort of get to the bottom of the RAM form, which we've done, and we sort of find we've got a buyer who sort of says they're ready to buy. How do we move naturally into asking for the order without resorting to any of the horrid closing techniques?
Okay, well, if there were a magical wand I could wave, I would love to wave it. There is no magical wand to wave. However, Getting commitment is a process, all right? Mm-hmm. And there are two ways that I teach people how to get commitment and how you move naturally into asking for commitment. One is the three magic words, and we've already talked a little bit about this, and this is like a contextual model that you need to know every step of the way in a relationship. Do I have alignment? Am I aligned with this person? Do they trust me? Am I in rapport? Have I earned the right to sit here and talk to them about what it is that they want? And you can actually use the words, are we in alignment? All right. And you want to know essentially that that person feels comfortable with you in such a way that they're willing to give you whatever information both of you need to make a good buying decision. The second is agreement. Agreement is getting clear on what a person wants and what they agree to do. So in other words, if you have alignment, the person feels comfortable with you, that you're the trusted resource, you're the trusted authority, you're the trusted voice, the next thing is to get clear that you have agreement on everything that person wants, the way they want it, when they want it, how they want it, why they want it, and even the criteria that they're going to use to decide who they're going to work with. And all of those agreements become part of the process of making commitment an easy next step. And then the third part of that three magic words is commitment. And the commitment essentially is, what are you committed to actually doing? This is a huge, huge distinction that we need to talk about, because what enables a person to advance a relationship with buyer and seller is commitment. Mm-hmm. And commitment is action, meaning what are you willing to do that your next step, meaning the buyer, will move you closer to getting the result you want. And so commitment is all about buyer action. Sometimes a buyer is not ready to make a commitment to do anything. If that's the case, then the seller wants to be very careful, because it's the natural tendency of sellers, and I'm guilty of this myself, is we want to do work, we want to move forward, we want to take some action, thinking if we take action, do a proposal, do a benefits analysis, come up with some sort of a solution package, that the buyer will feel compelled to do that step.
Yep.
But the truth of the matter is that doesn't work.
Now, I've been there.
We've all been there. I've been there, but I put in hundreds, thousands of hours doing work that I thought would lead the buyer to do something and make a commitment, but it didn't. Why? Because if the buyer's not ready to make a commitment, you have not yet helped them identify the real cost of the problem or the real value of a solution. And that's the second model that we use to make commitment easy. I call it the cost value analysis. You basically help a person. We have a full video on this. It's a full section in the New Game of Selling. This is probably one of the most copied and utilized of all the models that I've ever taught. This is the one that really is where the rubber meets the road. It's how do you convert a browser to a buyer, and how do you get them to say, I want this, I'm ready for this, let's do this, rather than you having to convince or persuade them to do it. And basically it comes down to a two-part process. Part one is help the buyer understand, internalize, and feel the real cost of the problem. Financially, emotionally, psychologically, operationally, even spiritually, to get that person to really understand through a series of questions, implication questions, consequence questions, and ramification questions, what is the real cost of this problem, and how deeply is that cost affecting you right now? And it's critical that whatever your product or services that you sell or whatever work you do, you get your buyers to put a price tag on the cost of that problem. Here's why. If I have a $1,000 problem and it's going to cost me $10,000 to solve it, that's a problem that I'm not going to solve. I'm going to live with that problem. Even if it costs me $1,000 and it hurts, it's going to be a problem I live with because the cost of the problem isn't as expensive as the cost of the solution. Mm-hmm. Or the cost of the problem is just not that great. Maybe I'm not worried about it. I'm not losing sleep over it. It doesn't affect the operation of my life or my business or my work. It's not affecting me physically. All right. If I have a $100,000 problem and I can solve that problem for $10,000, the financial equation there is just too great. I'm going to probably do that every single time, especially if the economic cost and the personal cost, the psychological cost, the emotional cost, the physical cost, the operational cost is great. I'm going to solve that problem almost every single time. Those are the two extremes. Most problems are not that black and white. You know, I use the analogy, let's say you had a $10,000 problem and it cost you $10,000 to solve. Now, all of a sudden, it's not black and white economically and financially. What's going to cause you to solve that problem are other factors, like emotional factors, operational factors, how much is it affecting me? Am I losing sleep over it? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so the cost of the problem is the first and most important thing to help a person determine and to see whether it makes more sense to keep that problem or to look at a solution. Part two of the process is to look at the value or payoff of solving the problem. And that's where benefit questions, payoff questions, reward questions, value questions start to come into play, like how will it alleviate some of the emotional and psychological effects of the problem? Will it make the operation of your life or your business or your work more smoothly? Where would be the psychological impact and maybe even the spiritual impact today? People look at spirituality as part of their decision-making process. In the past, that never even came into play. Once you have those two equations, the cost of the problem and then the value of the solution, it becomes really a simple question. Does it make more sense? Is it in your best interest to solve this problem now or to live with it? And if the best interest is to live with it for a little while longer, then there's no sense me going into a sales presentation unless you feel like it'd be worthwhile. Maybe I could say something in my presentation that might trigger you moving from getting ready to being ready. But the truth is, if you don't feel the problem is big enough to solve right now, chances are good you're going to defer the decision. And if I try to press you on that, I'm going to extinguish any chance that I have for future business because I'm pushing you to do something you're not quite ready to do. And so when you look at those two models, the three magic words plus the cost of value analysis, now it becomes very comfortable, very easy to empower the buyer to say, is it in your best interest to move forward with the solution and solve this today? Or is it in your best interest to hold off and hang on because being in the status quo, the cost of the problem is just not that significant yet. And so we teach you how to actually do those two models step by step by step in the new game of selling. That's the short version of it.
Okay, that's great. And when you sort of come to actually sort of trying to get to the commitment stage, it's literally just as you said, sort of you ask the question, sort of, are you ready now to go ahead or you make your statement that they agree to?
It really comes down to a simple question. Paul, is it in your best interest to solve this problem today? Is it in your best interest to pursue an alternate? Is it in your best interest? Is the value of the solution great enough? Is the cost of the problem great enough? And does it make sense for you? Not to ask somebody, you know, your pen or mine, but if you go through this process with people, they're going to know intuitively and they're going to know logically because now you've helped them process out both the intuitive and the logical, and they're going to know in their heart and in their mind, does it make sense for me to go forward? In other words, I'm going to buy my solution, which is going to transform me and transport me from point A to point B. You don't have to sell it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that question, is it in your highest and best interest right now to move forward with a solution and to look for an alternative to change what you're doing? That question alone can transform your life and transform your business, provided you've gone through the cost-value analysis with people.
Okay, no, that's great, Mitch. I mentioned your New Gamer Selling Training, which people can see at www.newgamerselling.com. And you've given us sort of highlights in sort of about 45 minutes of what is probably sort of 15 or 16 hour program. How else can listeners sort of find out more about your ideas to grow a business?
Well, certainly at the website newgameofselling.com, which we have a complete explanation of what's in the New Game of Selling. All of the modules are laid out. There's six parts to it. And the first part essentially is the new game distinctions, what's happening in the marketplace that's changing the game of business from the inside out. Part two is all about the inner game, winning the inner game of selling. I spent a lot of time talking about a couple of different models that people can incorporate to win the inner game of selling so that, you know, no matter how much you polish the outside of the car, if you don't keep the engine humming, the car is never going to run the way it's meant to run. And if you're a high-performance race car, if you're a high-performance human, your inner game is as important as your outer game. And I know I have to keep practicing and playing and honing my inner game. So that's part two.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next part is, how do you attract people? How do you attract the ideal buyers, the people that you're best suited to serve? Part four is how do you qualify people then? How do you enable yourself to separate out the browsers from the buyers? How do you use the buying cycle to triage and identify your phase one, phase two, and phase three buyers? How do you use the marketing pipeline then to go into your pipeline of people and approach them so that you're talking and attracting as many phase three buyers as you possibly can? The next step is, how do you convert browsers to buyers? I shared a couple of the four or five models that we teach on how do you convert browsers to buyers. And then the last section is, how do you keep and multiply customers? How do you upsell? How do you cross-sell? We share the five questions of service. We share the mega referrals part of the process, which is killer. Most businesses that I work with, even my own, we're not getting anywhere near the number and the level of referrals we could and deserve to get because we're so busy out there trying to get new people. How do you reactivate people using the five questions of service? How do you cross-sell and upsell and multiply your return on investment? So we cover the entire gamut of from the current state of the game of business in the world to the inner game, to the outer game of how do you attract, qualify, convert, keep, and multiply customers. It's the best of everything that I've ever used. The models that we share in the New Game of Selling have created $2.5 billion of revenue. One of my clients alone took their company to $500 million from about 150,000 using the New Game of Selling models. We've trained literally thousands of companies with this, and in addition to being able to purchase the New Game of Selling, which is a $1,000 course, we retail it at $397 online is what we sell it for, yet we're doing a kind of a holiday special through the rest of this year, and so we're going to discount that down to $197.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, yeah, it's a steal of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, really, you... If for the cost of maybe one medium or large size classified ad that you run once, you can have literally the cream of the crop, world class, best of breed selling strategies that I've personally used to make millions of dollars and our clients have used to make $2.5 billion. And you can use it and own it forever. So for the balance of this year, you can purchase the New Game of Selling for $197. It includes about 15 hours of audio, a transcript of the entire program, about 30 different links to 30 different models, like the RAM formula, like the buying cycle, like the three magic words, the cost of value analysis, rejection-proof networking, how to talk to anyone anytime, anywhere, about anything without rejection, and about 30 of those. And we also will then give you Starting January 1st, we're actually creating a membership. And so you'll get a month free membership into our new game of selling community, which will really blow your mind because, you know, this is an ongoing process. I've been at this game 32 years. I don't know everything there is to know. And I actually go back and review my own program because there you forget. It's so easy to get away from what works. And, you know, you get comfortable and complacent and you forget. And so I go back to this program over and over and over again. And what I realized is just having the home steady version is great, but being able to have a forum to talk to people, a way to see what how people are using it, success stories, case studies, and then even having me every month go on and do a class like this where we take questions and real life situations. You know, so we'll also throw in a month free of the New Game of Selling community for anybody who purchases the New Game of Selling between now and the end of the year as well. So, yeah, it's a gold mine. It's been good to me, and it's been wonderful for the literally the hundreds of thousands of people that I've trained over the years in the New Game of Selling strategies.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mitch. I think the listeners will have gained a lot from it, and it's been a great refresher for me.
Well, you're welcome, Paul, and thank you for having me. I'm always eager and excited to share the New Game of Selling with people because for the vast majority of people I've met over the years, and myself included, selling is not a natural skill. I believe sales ability is the most underdeveloped of all the success abilities necessary to succeed in today's world. Very few of us have been taught how to sell elegantly, how to sell that actually helps people to buy, and how to sell in a way that positions you not as a salesperson, but as the most trusted voice that a person can turn to. And so I'm really proud of what we've created here. And of course, we give a one-year money-back guarantee that essentially says if you can use this for a year and you actually use it and it doesn't produce a multiple return on investment, provided you've tried it, we'll actually refund your money up to 1 year because there's absolutely no way that if you use what we teach in the New Game of Selling, even if you take just one model, the RAM formula, or the three magic words, or rejection-proof networking, or the cost-value analysis, you just use one model, it will absolutely get you a multiple return on investment. And if you actually don't, 1 year from now, you can come back and say, I did everything I could and it didn't produce a return, and we'll give you your money back. That's how confident we are this program will work for you.
Okay, great. Thank you again, Mitch. Take care.
You too. Thanks, Paul. Talk to you again
soon.
Bye. Bye-bye.